We're glad you're joining us here at NRCC Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. So last week's lesson was kind of a history lesson, putting the history of our own spiritual community into the broader context of this social collapse of religion that we are seeing going on around us, putting our history of stripping down and rebuilding religion into that broader context. And so we talked about how we had been rethinking our story, rethinking God and rethinking the Bible and rethinking Jesus and rethinking sin and rethinking salvation and rethinking the afterlife and rethinking prayer and meditation and the journey inward and accessing the interior divine and oneness that is not sameness, and all that informs Tikkun Olam and all that informs the connectedness to everything. And the hardest one was rethinking organized religion, because for many of us, organized religion has been the problem. For many of us, organized religion has been what has caused so much pain. And so, in the process of rethinking organized religion, we looked and said, well, let's think about the ancient practices, the practices that inform that, the communal, the contemplative, the learning, and the serving practices. And then let's think, once we've kind of figured out how those ancient practices work, how those help us belong, the creating of authentic spiritual community, how those help us become, how the practices help us tap into the interior spirit, the interior divine, and are transformed by the process, and how we benefit the world and how we bring that benefit to making ours a better world. So we went through that process, and all those things that I just listed very quickly took a long, long time. And it was an emotional process because it was different than what we'd grown up with in church. And it was only after we had done that, in hindsight, looking back, that we looked up and realized, oh, you know what we stumbled onto? We stumbled onto a spiritual narrative that works. We find ourselves in a story that points us in a very healthy direction to access the inner divine. Huh, you know what we stumbled onto? We stumbled onto ancient practices that, updated for our current world, actually work to transform our lives. We found that, these things do change us. And what we had stumbled onto was a simple base model prototype of healthy, organized religion. If you missed last week, it'll be worth listening online because it gives you kind of a history of our community. But I ended up saying at the end of last week's lesson this: eventually, our society is going to hammer out a shared narrative. And eventually, our society is going to have institutions that will support that narrative. But that's not where we live right now in our generation. Right now, something new is being born, and the birth process is painful. And the birth process is disorienting, and it's difficult. But the job for our generation, I said, is to lay the groundwork for them. To lay the groundwork for them. The job of our generation is to do what we've been doing, investing in the future, stripping these things down, finding the historical roots behind why we have done what we've done when we've been healthy, updating that for the world that we live in now, and leaving kind of a prototype blueprint for our children and grandchildren. Because what we're doing together as a community, and what is being done across the world right now, is we are rebuilding a social institution that has a very important role in society. Because when religion is healthy, what it does is it helps us become better people. And it helps us become people who make a better world. It's been so long since religion's been healthy that a lot of people don't believe what I just said. But that is the role that religion plays in society. And that is what we've been doing together. That is, when we have been stumbling our way forward, this is where that stumbling journey has been taking us. Which brings us to today. So now what? A couple months ago, I tweaked the newcomer announcement to say something along these lines. Welcome. Glad you're here. Here's our invitation. Come rebuild religion with us. Rebuild our spiritual framing narrative with us. Come rebuild healthy spiritual practices with us. Because what organized religion is a place where we learn, we develop this context where we belong and become and benefit the world. And when that's the objective of an organization, it makes it a very different kind of organization. It's the kind of organization that can't be done from the top down. It's just not possible. It's not that we don't have the right people at the top. You all do. But it's the very notion that someone at the top can make this happen. It just doesn't happen that way. That can't be done. This is the kind of organization that must be done, all of us together. However, you and I live in a society that has saturated us with a kind of thinking about organizations that is, and here's the word, transactional. Let me tell you what I mean by that. So, 70% of our nation's economic activity is ordinary people like you and me having transactional relationship with some organization or another. It's which basically means, okay, organization, I will give you my money, I will give you my time, I will give you my mind space, I will give you my data, and in exchange for that, you will give me some product or service that I want. And as long as you keep giving me this product or service that I want, and as long as I keep wanting it, well, then I'll keep giving you my money or my time and my mind space and my data. So, as soon as, in a transactional relationship, one of those criteria no longer applies, well, then the relationship is over. I will no longer be giving you my time, money, space. So, that's what happens in our lives every day, every day, every day. Transaction after transaction after transaction. And it happens so much, and it happens every day so often, that pretty soon the pattern of transactional relationships moves from us having the transaction to a set of interior assumptions that we have about the way things are. In other words, transactional relating begins to be the shape of how we approach life. And it creeps into places that it kind of doesn't belong, like in relationships. I'm in relationship with you in a transactional arrangement because you give me something that I want and I give you something that you want, which is true because relationships are mutually beneficial. But that's only part of a healthy relationship. And when our transactional instincts creep into places, bleed into places they don't belong, we don't define our relationships transactionally. We just feel that way about our relationships. We ask ourselves questions like, am I getting anything out of this relationship? Is it worth it? Is it worth the price that I pay to be in this relationship? And to be sure, there are times in which it's better to not be in relationships. That's always true. But when that's the instinct, the unspoken, unarticulated instinct that bleeds into our approach to relationships, it makes it very difficult to sustain relationships because relationships tend to front load the pain. I am married to a wonderful woman. She really is wonderful. I think I'm a pretty wonderful man. Wonderful woman and a wonderful man, you cannot believe the front-loaded pain it was to get to the place where our relationship worked. And I thought to myself, we're really good people. Why is this so stinking difficult? It's because relationships are that kind of difficult. That's what it means to create this new reality called our life. And when we think transactionally about our relationships, we tend to bail before the process goes where the process goes. We tend to bail when the front-loaded pain and difficulty and challenge and discomfort hasn't yet been resolved to get us to the place where we need to go. And so transactional relationships belong some places and don't belong other places. But we're not talking about relationships today. We're talking about the nature of religion. But healthy religion is more like a love relationship than it is like a business. Healthy religion is not a service for a fee kind of arrangement. It's more like a family than it is like a business. Spiritual community works when everybody is bonded to the well-being of the spiritual community. When we all recognize that all of our fortunes rise and fall on the health and the well-being of the community, that's when we begin to emerge into healthy spiritual community. You might have heard the parable of the commons. In the village center, there is some grazing land, and if everybody puts two sheep into the commons, the grass will replenish itself and everybody benefits. But the commons could sustain some people putting in three sheep. And so, sure enough, somebody puts in three sheep. And as soon as somebody puts in three sheep, everybody puts in three sheep, and then the commons are overgrazed, and then nobody benefits. The invitation to spiritual community is an invitation to take an ownership stake in the well-being of the commons. The invitation to spiritual community is to develop the kind of relationship with the community in which we are all vested in the community's well-being. Now, let me get practical and talk about how that might work out in our own community. There are a couple of things right now that the staff and the board are kind of thinking through. How are we going to make this part of our community healthier? I'll tell you what they are. The first is that, here's the thing. Unhealthy religion forgets the why. When religion gets unhealthy, it remembers what religion is supposed to do, but forgets why we're supposed to do it. And so then religion just applies the thing, forgetting the reason behind the thing, and that's a recipe for inevitably we're going to lose our way. We're going to make a miscue. So in this instance, collective ownership of spiritual community, that's a good thing. But if we forget the why behind that, we just do the thing and we forget the reason behind the whole context that informs collective ownership of community. And here's what happens when we start thinking shared ownership but forget the why. Inevitably, it becomes pressure. It becomes the service provider, usually the preacher guy, standing up in front, pressuring people to serve the church, pressuring people to volunteer, pressuring people to show up to the meetings, pressuring people to prop up the programs. And when that happens, a good thing goes bad. For a long time, we called this the C word, commitment, because we'd been burned in those kinds of religious institutions before where we lost the sense of the why behind shared ownership, and all it was give and give and give some more, serve and serve and serve some more. No joy, no sense of the interconnectedness that results from that, only pressure. And when lots and lots of people have been burned in that kind of context, even though we might be trying to rebuild a healthy version of religion, even though we might be making sure that nobody gets burned out, it doesn't matter because if you've been bitten by a snake, you're afraid even of a rope. Once burned, twice shy. We start talking about commitment and people quietly go out the door. So we're going to have to think about that together. We're going to have to figure out how we're going to approach that as a community because we won't be healthy without shared ownership of the community. And that does mean there will be some kinds of commitments that we make to the community, and we don't know exactly how to do that because we haven't asked for commitment in the past. That's one thing we're thinking about. A second thing we're thinking about is eldership. You might remember when I was talking about in the sex ed lesson about thinking of lovemaking as a lifelong commitment and how we become elders over the time. The story that we have stumbled onto, the religious narrative we stumbled onto, it's a good one. And it does point us in a direction that breeds life within us. And our practices, they really are rooted in ancient wisdom and they are updated so that they work for now and they really do transform us. So, when we do the stuff that we do together over time, it ends up changing us. The practices do what practices do. The story does what story does. They change us, they awaken us, they tap us into the interior divine. You know that happens. You've seen it around you. You've seen it happen in you. And about the time folks are ready for eldering, for taking a role of helping other people integrate the story, of helping other people integrate the practices. Just about that time, we often notice people drifting away. Now, partly that's because of the way we're organized. We don't really have systems that say, okay, spiritually mature person, here's the next step on your journey, do this next, do this. That's part of it. But a bigger part of it, I think, is because we are saturated in our society's transactional instincts. We get what we need from a company, and after we've gotten what we need from a company, we don't need those goods and services anymore. Of course we drift away. That's the end of the transaction. So when that happens, as we as an elder become elders, we realize I no longer need so much what the community has. It is true that the community needs not what I have, but in this transactional context, it's time now to begin to drift away. Well, we're going to be working on both of those concerns, and if history's any indicator, a couple years from now, we'll be a whole lot better at them than we are right now. But here's where it starts. It starts with a shift in our thinking. Healthy spiritual community is not a business. It does benefit us, but not in a goods and services kind of way. We don't come to spiritual community to get something out of it. We do. We get something, we really do, but it's not an exchange of goods and services for time, dollars, energy. It's not that kind of thing. As a matter of fact, if it is that kind of thing, that becomes the death knell for healthy religious community. We have a great board and a great staff. They are thoughtful and they are discerning and they are devoted, but those two words, board and staff, can be very misleading. They make it sound like we are something that we are not. Here's what our board is. Here's what our staff is. It's you. It's some volunteers. Now, a few of them get a very small stipend that if we were to calculate out the number of hours they put in, might be around minimum wage, but we don't even do it that way. It's a way of saying thank you because we were looking for consistency that we weren't able to get with our volunteers. So what they do is they organize the rest of us. They help us connect. They help us care for our young people. They help us communicate effectively. They help us organize our Sundays. But here's what they are. They're volunteers. They are not employees. I have to tell them all the time, fewer hours. Because they love our community, I have to say all the time, we want you for 20 years. We don't want you for 20 weeks. And if you keep going at this pace, you'll burn out. We need to think sustainably. So here's kind of what I'm saying. There is no them. There is only us. A few of us help the rest of us get organized so that we can be us. But it's just us. And that's actually the way spiritual community is supposed to be. Community that's owned by the community is the way it's supposed to be. As soon as we are run by professionals, we start the process of losing our way. What that means is all of us have an ownership stake in the community. Now, we have to be very careful that nobody gets burned out, and we are. We work really hard on making sure nobody gets burned out. We spend a lot of time looking at the art of our yes and our no, because every yes that we say is a no to something else, and we have to be very careful about that. But when we become part of a spiritual community, here's what we can't do. We can't take our list of already things we're doing and jam spiritual community in there because none of us are sitting around with free time. None of us have just decided, I don't have enough to do in my life. We're all busy people. So when we put spiritual community in, something else has to come out. We have to say no in order to say yes. And what we say yes to is what makes spiritual community work. All of us taking an ownership stake. Now, I'm imagining that's starting to feel like pressure. So hold on, because I'm going to show you how it's not in just a moment. But here's the thing. Spiritual community works when we participate. Spiritual community works when we give of ourselves to the community. Now, again, being very careful with our yeses, but being part of the community is showing up. When someone is working on authentic community, we show up to support them by being part of the community. When someone is helping us meditate together, we show up to meditate together. When someone is forming a life story group, we show up to share our story. When someone is working on a self-awareness, self-disclosure, we show up so that we can participate in that and be an encourager of others who are doing it. We don't measure the invitations that we get in a spiritual community the same way that we measure invitations that we get from a company. A company issues an invitation, and we consider it a transaction that says, will I get as much as they want me to give them in exchange for this? But in a community, we do ask that question, do I want this thing, or is it worth the price that I would pay to get that thing? Yes, that's part of the calculus, but it's only a part of the calculus. Because there's another question that we have to ask as well. Not just, is it good for me? Would my participation in this thing be good for the community? Will newcomers feel more connected if I participate in the life story group this time? Will our community get better at the practice of self-awareness and self-disclosure if I participate and if I invite others to participate? Will we be healthier if I do an Enneagram group this year and get to know the people who would be in that group and share my journey with them? Being part of a spiritual community isn't just asking about our own personal well-being. It's also asking about the well-being of the commons. It's asking about the well-being of the community when we all take an ownership stake in the well-being of the community. It's not just what I get out. It is. We all get something out of being part of community. But it is also, is the community thriving? Is the community prospering? Because I give what I have to give. And that's where rebuilding healthy religion has to begin, which is challenging to do when you live in a society saturated by transactional relationships. But if we're going to leave the rough draft blueprint for those generations to come, it begins there. So it's kind of like, ask not, only not that. Not only ask, what can your spiritual community do for you? But also ask, what can you do for your spiritual community? That's where healthy spiritual community begins. We participate, we contribute, and we take a vested stake in the health of the community. We do the practices because we need to do the practices, but also because the community gets healthier when we do the practices together. Other people need me to do the practices with them. Other people need me to be in a group with them. Other people need me to take a walk around the lake with them and talk about our souls together. Now, the announcements are the work product of a whole bunch of people who have stretched themselves to the limits of their time and the limits of their energy to create spaces for us to rebuild religion together. So come, those announcements invite us, and put your fingerprints all over the rebuilding process. Come, those announcements say, and hammer out with us what healthy spiritual community is like, how it works out in our lives. Learn the story so that you can tell the story. Learn the practices so you can share the practices. Do the group so there is a group for everybody. Work on your soul so that your soul is healthy, so you can give from your healthy soul and invite others into healthy souls. Now again, we really do benefit from spiritual community, but the commons won't stay healthy if we don't all also work to create healthy community. So ask after people that you haven't seen in a while. Here's where it gets practical. Here's where it gets here and now and small and doable. Here's where it doesn't daunt any one of us or overwhelm any of us. Bring a meal to someone. Start a meal train. Invite a newcomer to coffee. I said earlier, it's a whiplash for people when they come here. How in the world have you people gotten from there to here? So take people out for coffee and tell your story. Help them out. Know your story so you can tell your story. I wrote the first book to help you. It'll give you a framing construct. We're talking about this journey. Invite one another to belong. Invite people to do something socially or to do something that develops personal relationship or to do something that develops deeper relationships. Here's a question that I've asked people for years. It's a way of getting conversation going that's more authentic. So, how's your soul? As soon as you ask that question, you know we're not going to be talking about the Panthers. So, we're saying, so tell me what's going on in your life. Tell me, speak in a more comprehensive way about your well-being. Learn to do the self-awareness, self-disclosure worksheet by attending the workshop so that you know how to do it, so that you can then become the listener, so you can invite people for the doing. If you're social, invite people to things that are social. If you're an extrovert, do a thing. Invite people to a concert. I don't know what extroverts do. Social. Set up a play date. Use Meetup. We're having the elementary lunch we're having today because some of our parents realized that our parents need to connect with each other and our kids need to connect with each other. Somebody just took an ownership stake and said, we're going to have a lunch. That's what we're going to do. We do regular events in the lobby because some time ago people started to recognize, yeah, Doug has a lot of good things to offer. Social, not one of them. So they begin to say, we should do these things and we could bring a balance to the imbalance. Somebody took an ownership stake in that. Chris Thompson was trying to organize a life story group and ran into what we often run into, which is how difficult it is to actually get our schedules to jive. And when the group couldn't get their schedule to jive, he took a step back and he said, so here's what we'll do. We'll have a lunch after church. That won't be a proper life story group, but we could do a little bit of that, and all of a sudden people begin to connect at a deeper level. One of the ladies in our community had a chat with a newcomer recently. Then the newcomers had come right after our fall push where we're doing all those things. So from August through November, we're doing all this stuff. We'll start again in January. But if someone comes right after all that's closed, what are they going to do and how do they connect? And so you saw what showed up in the thing. On December 15th, we're going to have a coffee for newcomers because somebody said, oh, how do we watch out for our new newcomers? So if you are part of that, here's one of the things that happened. One of the parents in our church recognized that Miss Chris and Miss Vicky and Miss Mary were kind of isolated from the rest of the community because they're in the first lesson, and then they go up there, and then everybody just evaporates. So they said, you know what we need to do? We need to do a connecting group so that they can participate, and so they took an ownership stake in that. A lot of new folks have gone to the IAF meetings and realized, you know, IAF is scary for folks. We live in this hyper-polarized political moment, and it can feel like we're pushing a political agenda on somebody else. So they've been out telling the story. Here's what we did, here's what we're going to do, and see, it's not scary, come, you can go with me, and we can participate together. After one service, I talked about how much easier it is for me to meditate because I invite my son over for breakfast before he goes to work. We have a 6 o'clock breakfast, and then he goes to work, and we get meditation in. Right after that, Jack stood up, and he said, hey, I will do that with anyone who will do it. Come, we'll sort out the details, taking an ownership stake in belonging. I know an introvert in our community who has been reading through the contact list just so that he knows people's names. And then on Sundays, he works hard to remember that name, and he greets people by name and reminds them of his name. And he said, wow, you would not believe the interesting conversations that I've had just because I've started doing that simple practice. One of our folks went to a potluck with one of the other congregations, and he met someone there from the Islamic Center. And after having done this little sharing thing that we did, we got exchanged numbers and started going to coffee with this guy, developing a bigger version of we, like we've been talking about. Ownership of the community is a very here, now, small, doable thing. And I can give you ideas, but you don't have to wait for ideas. This is not in my notes. This is just free. So I try really hard when the kids were young, tried really hard to help Denise do the stuff around the house. And, you know, if she would ask me to do something, I would make sure I did it. At one point she said, you know, Doug, thank you for all of your willingness to help. But I think you have eyes in your head. And I think you can see that the stinking dishwasher needs to be turned on. And I don't think you, thank you for your willingness to turn it on when I tell you to turn it on, but it would be really nice if I didn't have to have that in my head. And so this, without the tone that went with it, is kind of what we're talking about. And that is, you know the circle. You know the communal practices and the contemplative practices, the learning and the serving. You know the belonging. You know the, you know all this stuff. Let's own it. It's ours. We make the community. Owning the spiritual community is a commitment we make to the well-being of the whole. And that invitation that we offer newcomers is an invitation that's extended to every one of us. The preacher guy can't make this happen. The board and the staff can't make this happen. Group leaders can't make this happen. Only we can make this happen. But here's what happens if we do. If we do make this happen, if we do go through this process of rethinking our spiritual narrative together, and if we do go through this process of rethinking our spiritual practices together, and if we do create an environment in which we do belong, in which we do become, in which we do better the world, then we set up a world before us, for our children and for our grandchildren, in which there are better people making a better future, creating a better world. So that's the invitation. The invitation is to take up the ownership of spiritual community because it belongs to all of us. And so, indwelling spirit, may it be so among us as a community.
If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, NorthRaleighCommunityChurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page on your computer's browser, at the bottom on your phone's browser. Thank you.